I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to Pod TSC, a weekly LA Rams podcast. I'm Kenneth Arthur, and with me this week is former NFL quarterback JT O'Sullivan, a current quarterback analyst, expert draft analyst. And if you go to the QB school, JT O'Sullivan, I didn't finish that sentence. JT O'Sullivan is with me. And if you go to the QB school on YouTube, I was going there often during the 2021 pre-draft build-up, watching the quarterbacks through JT O'Sullivan's eyes, learning about the quarterbacks, learning a lot about X's and O's of football. I do recommend going to the QB school on YouTube because now and JT, he's already into the 2022 draft, including my favorite quarterback in college football, Grayson McCall. So I would go watch the Grayson McCall analysts and anyone who might be your favorite quarterback. But with me this week to talk about the Rams quarterback is JT O'Sullivan. JT, thanks for coming on the show. Did I get everything right on the QB school?
You did a better job than I would have. I appreciate it. I have fun with all those things. It's funny to see how the channel continues to evolve and really just kind of go down little rabbit holes of whatever I think is interesting. So I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I appreciate your very honest, straightforward analysis and answers. And I think there is a level of honesty through your analysis that not everybody you get from everybody on TV necessarily, but right here, I think, you know, your days on TV, should you want them, I look forward to more of that happening in the future. I want to run down, I think, you know, fans of the NFL, if they were fans in the 2010s, there's a chance that you were on their team. If you don't mind, I want to run through quickly, briefly, just your stops in the NFL. And if any of these are incorrect, then please do feel free to correct me. But beginning in 2002, from 2002 to 2004, you were with the New Orleans Saints. And these are just NFL teams: Green Bay Packers in 2004, Bears and Vikings in 2005, Patriots and Panthers in 2006, Bears and Lions in 2007, 49ers in 2008, Bengals in 2009, Chargers in 2010, as well as the Raiders in 2010. And then with several stops in the Frankfurt Galaxy, and then finally with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. This is all from Wikipedia. Can you confirm that Wikipedia is correct?
Wikipedia is pretty good. Yeah, no, it's right on there. It feels that feels like a lot. It didn't quite feel like that many when I was going through it, but reflecting on it, it certainly felt well traveled. I like to tell people that I played for a third of the league, or over a third of the league. So
yeah, there you go. And I'm curious, you know, there are guys, there are quarterbacks that have certain experience, like maybe with a bunch of starts in the NFL, and you didn't get a lot of starts in the NFL, but you did have that experience from that point of view. And I think that's a very unique, valuable experience. What did you learn being in that many rooms, being around that many different quarterbacks and quarterback coaches and head coaches? Like, what would you say was your paradigm, your point of view on the NFL as a player, as a quarterback, trying to stick in a room or trying to soak up knowledge everywhere you go, but then also consistently being on the move? What would you say you took away from that?
I mean, just so many different nuggets. I think the core one that I thought resonated, you know, wherever I went, was just a level of self-belief and resiliency that I felt like I belonged and was looking for opportunities to showcase that. And that doesn't mean that you weren't, you know, going to be a bad teammate or going to be selfish, you know, in that regard. You were going to prepare and do the best that you possibly can and hold the team first. But realizing that as a pro, you get paid to go out there and perform. And when you get your opportunity, you have to be ready and you have to be willing to do whatever it takes to get yourself ready. And not everybody's the same in that regard. And coming at it from a really diligent and, you know, systematic approach to making sure that you're ready to go when you get your opportunity and maximizing that opportunity, because it, you know, it is a very finite opportunities across the league, especially for a guy like me, a Division II non-scholarship guy, mm-hmm. that just being really strategic about preparation, being ready to go and executing. And then at the end of the day, you got to play at a high level enough to stick around and feel like you can help the team and the organization. And that's what I tried to do at every one of those stops.
Yeah. You mentioned your college background, and very rare for somebody coming out of UC Davis or someone coming out of a UC Davis, UC Davis adjacent type school, anywhere in the school, in the country, very rare to get drafted, let alone in the sixth round. But you managed to do that. Would you say that because you're analyzing the draft so much now, and we know that the draft has changed, do you think that coming out of UC Davis, do you think that would have been less important now, or do you think that you could have even gone higher in the draft in today's NFL? Like, how much do you think that the draft has changed in evaluating quarterbacks in the last 20 years?
I would hope that it's gotten better. I'm not sure that it has. I'm not sure that I would go higher or lower if I came out, you know, in the draft nowadays. I was really fortunate. Davis has a pretty unique history with quarterback play. They have a former first rounder, Ken O'Brien, who played for the Jets. Mm-hmm. We actually went to the same high school as well. So I know Kenny O from a long time. And then the guy who played quarterback ahead of me, first 2 years of college, Kevin Daft, got drafted in the fifth round by the Titans. And so we had a really prolific offense, and we were kind of ahead of the times as far as what we were doing, spinning the ball. And so I was really fortunate in that regard. But the truth is, and this is what I tell young players, you know, when they're getting in the recruiting processes, everybody thinks that they're going to go to the league, even if they don't tell you that. Mm-hmm. And the reality is if you're good enough, they will find you. Yeah. You know, and that's hard to hear when you're a youngster and you feel like, you know, God, you're pissed that you're a 2-star, not a 5-star or a 4-star or things like that, that really don't matter at the end of the day. What matters is how well you perform. What does your body of work look like? And how do you project to impact an organization on Sundays? And if you're fortunate enough to play at a lower level institution, like I was, as far as Division II or Division III or NAIA, you really have to pop on the screen and on the film. And it's not impossible. It's just different paths to that, but it's certainly less likely than going to a Power Five institution and taking the normal kind of trajectory to that. But I think that the quarterback position itself has gotten so much better across the board, and it starts, you know, at who's playing the quarterback position. The lower levels, I think, are improving. The access to information, high quality coaching, position specific coaching has gotten so much better. It's accelerated the learning of so many younger quarterbacks that I think you see that in the play at the higher levels of college, where guys are coming in, doing 3 years and going into the draft and then coming into the league and playing at a high level. And so it's exciting for the position, and I have fun taking a peek at some of those players.
And one more thing before we get into the Rams and their quarterback situation, just jumping off of that point, the Rams will presumably be facing a quarterback coming out of not a Power Five school twice a year at some point in Trey Lance. Eventually, as you were doing your quarterback analysis and not having that as much tape on Trey Lance in the last year as nobody did, how fearful should the rest of the NFC West be with Trey Lance in Kyle Shanahan's offense, do you think? And do you see that happening to any degree this year?
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite storylines of this upcoming NFL season. I think that if you don't know anything about the program that he came from at North Dakota State, it's probably the premier FCS, what was Division I AA for a long time, football. They play football at a very high level. you know, the quote unquote, a pro style offense. He's under center. He's doing things that you will translate to Sundays. And you're right on as far as the issue about no current or recent film made the, you know, the analysis of what his projection more difficult. And I think for, you know, anybody that tries to do what I'm doing, as far, it's always incomplete anyway, because we never speak to the players. We never talk to the coaches, you know, it's just off the film. And it's a big jump from being a 19-year-old playing for the first time in college to, you know, coming out of the draft for the draft, essentially 18 months later, you can get significantly better. And I think it's a fascinating pick for the Niners. They obviously gave up a lot to make it happen and got to be feeling great about what he brings to the organization. But, you know, there will certainly be some learning pains as well, just like there is for anybody playing the position young in the league. And so it's going to be fascinating to see. But man, in a half a decade, he could be causing all sorts of issues for that division.
Yeah, it'll be, there's so many interesting quarterbacks coming into the league this year. And it seems like, you know, that's only going to grow next year. It seems like as we're looking at the quarterbacks to come out next year, which I think is, I wonder which teams are looking to 2022 already, and that's why they haven't made a big move at quarterback. But the Rams did make a big move at quarterback. They did not care to wait until 2022's draft, which they could have. They could have rested with Jared Goff and said, we know that Jared Goff, you know, 2018 was not too long ago. We know that with a very strong defense, maybe the Rams could survive another year and then look to the 2022 draft when they would have a first round pick again. And then they could trade up or do something for, you know, there's five or six, again, first round type quarterbacks as of now. That'll change. But looking at Jared Goff, obviously everybody was tuned into the Rams offense in 2017 and 2018 when it was, you know, not just the best in the league in many regards, but to have had that Sean McVay influence and to go from 32nd to first over one off season was truly something fascinating to watch. And Jared Goff was one of the main benefactors of all of the changes, including Andrew Whitworth and Sean McVay and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. You know, there's so many things going on at that time. And then in 2019, you know, after the Super Bowl loss, since then, Jared Goff and the Rams offense hasn't been so spectacular, maybe average at best. Before we get to the new quarterback, JT, I'm wondering what your thoughts were on Jared Goff's career from the best moments in 2018 and whether or not you thought that was sustainable to the point where Sean McVay and Jared Goff had to go their separate ways. Like, what was your analysis on Goff's career through those moments?
Yeah, I would probably be a little bit more in the middle, I guess, is the nicest way to say it, as opposed to someone who's a quote unquote, you know, diehard Rams fan. Mm-hmm. I think coming in as a number one pick, there will always be ridiculously high expectations. And he was one game away from bringing that to the franchise. And you can kind of see, not necessarily the same start to the career, but similar kind of impact of losing a Super Bowl on Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, whether you nail it down on one player or not, the performance of that game on certain critical turnovers or misses certainly feels like it has deep ramifications. And I think that most people who watch the Rams or have seen a decent amount of the Rams will know that Jared Goff maybe does not have the skill set that other guys do about pushing the ball down the field. And that confines a play caller to a certain extent. When you look across the league and you see guys making monster throws vertically down the field outside the numbers consistently, it stretches a defense like you should be able to stretch a defense nowadays. And to feel like you have handcuffs on as play callers, it's got to be frustrating, especially with that type of run game, play action, boot world, where they feel like they can create space down the field to take advantage of some speed. To now be able to do that with a new guy, I think is probably pretty exciting for, mm-hmm. for Sean McVay. But, you know, I have a lot of respect for Jared Goff. I know it's easy to kind of, you know, brush him off and move him to another city, but I mean, he brought a lot of offensive success to that organization. And I don't care who's calling the plays, you know, you still have to go out there and play the position at a high level consistently. And to do that and execute with that level of offense for multiple years is impressive and always will be impressive. And hopefully he gets an opportunity to play at a high level again in Detroit.
How important is that to match when you're drafting a quarterback? Because Jared Goff was not drafted for Sean McVay's offense. They did not know that Sean McVay would be the head coach a year later. How important, especially as we're looking at this now, as we're matching, you know, Kyle Shanahan to Trey Lance and Urban Meyer to Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson to Robert Saleh and his offensive coaching and all that kind of stuff. How important do you think that is? And why not, like, for a number one pick, not just a number one pick, but for trade up in a number one pick? And we had the same thing with Carson Wentz trading up for a number two pick in the same year. And both quarterbacks have had such oddly paralleled careers, and both quarterbacks traded this year. Like, with regards to how Jared Goff would be, this has to be the guy to a few years later saying he can't move the ball downfield. Is that something that is expected to get better with a quarterback as he grows? Or is that one of the things that you can develop and having the right coaching to do that?
I think that there are probably elements of it that you can develop and continue to work on and improve and make it a kind of an intentional focus, whether it's during the offseason or, you know, in a weekly plan environment. But at the end of the day, you are what you are. You know, you're about, you know, half a decade in the league plus, you're gonna basically, you know, be what you are as far as a thrower, in my opinion. Now, you can certainly still continue to improve, but as far as coming out there and having like a Josh Allen type transformation, throwing the ball, you know, I feel like would be a pretty significant stretch. I just think it's one of those things where the position has really evolved even since Jared Goff has been drafted. Mm-hmm. You know, you look across the landscape of the league, and Carson Wentz, I would say, is not a, obviously it's a nice analogy because of where they got drafted, but mm-hmm. Carson Wentz is a big, strong, athletic dude that can create off platform. And when he's healthy, he was almost, you know, an MVP of the league. Mm-hmm. Now, it certainly didn't work out in Philly for really different reasons, but he is a little bit more in line with what I think the position is moving towards as far as great athlete, dynamic, can kind of playmaker ability, big, strong arm, can drive the ball down the field. You know, I don't know if Jared Goff would be classified as that very often. I think he almost kind of reverts back to a more precision passer, pocket, you know, type of rhythm, smooth, different type of skill set than maybe some of the guys that you see playing at a really high level right now across the league.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you like, are you a stats guy? Do you like stats? Is there a quarterback stat that you think should be held in high regard over the others?
Not really. I mean, I look at all of them. I don't necessarily, it's always a fun discussion to see, you know, is winning a quarterback stat? Uh-huh. And, you know, I think that there are elements of that are true. But I look across the board for a handful of different stats, whether it's, you know, as a coach, I coach high school football, you know, we are very cognizant of a handful of stats, whether it be turnovers, explosive plays, yards per attempt, you know, things like that, but that's kind of, again, tethered more offensive scheme wise than necessarily position performance wise.
Yeah, because if you were looking at something like intended air yards per pass attempt, you would look at Drew Brees and the last few years of his career especially, and you would say he's the worst in the NFL in intended air yards per pass attempt. Does that mean that, you know, he's down there with Sam Darnold and some other, you know, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus and say, well, Sam Darnold, but we know that certain quarterbacks haven't been successful, and Kyle Allen, these are the names that are popping up in my head where Drew Brees lived, but he's Drew Brees, and the offense was going to work to the things that he was capable of doing at that point in his career. And because he's Drew Brees and he's so talented, he's able to have success where others are not having success. So his yards per attempt would maybe not be as high. And Aaron Rodgers, over the last previous 5 years prior to 2020, he didn't have a high yards per attempt. And there were a lot of people in the analytics community that started saying, well, Aaron Rodgers is overrated. And then as soon as Aaron Rodgers wanted to show that he could win MVP, he won MVP and he put up the best numbers in the NFL. And, you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess. I'm just having a side thought here. But absolutely, like, I think that stats will be a part of what changes in the Rams offense going from Goff to Stafford quarterback stats and the way that they push the ball downfield, as well as a number of other things. But what's really going to be important perhaps is style of play, schemes, and Sean McVay's ability to put new plays in the playbook and to call certain things and to not even have to call certain things, because I think that Matthew Stafford has proven over the last 12 years to be a very savvy quarterback who can be aware of what's going on. And not to say that Jared Goff can't be aware, but I think that there's a new level of awareness. Do you think that in terms of Jared Goff to Matthew Stafford, do you think you could give a comparison as far as for their prototypes, as far as their archetypes, like what type of quarterback or like comps from like a different era where you could say like, look, Matthew Stafford is like Steve Young and Jared Goff is like, Jim Kelly. And those aren't good comps, but how different do you see those two quarterbacks?
Well, and this is probably not going to be a great answer for you, but I probably see more similarities than others. For me, and that's why this whole thing has never made that much sense to me. I think physically, Matthew Stafford throws the ball down better. And what I mean by that is has a stronger arm. I'm not going to say throws the ball better across the board, but just stretches the field vertically more, has more pop in his arm, his ability to make more throws. And that's in the pocket on a normal cadence rhythm, but that's also out of structure outside the pocket, the ability to create a little bit. Now, the part that I think is always a little bit fascinating, and we alluded to it a little bit earlier as far as the winning element of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certainly people in the league that put Matthew Stafford at the elite of the elite of the quarterbacks and their attributes and abilities and have for the last decade.
Right.
No, I've either never watched that much Lions film since I played there, or I just don't necessarily gravitate to his vibe or that organization. But when I see him, that's not necessarily what pops for me. Mm-hmm. I think he certainly makes some wow throws and has had some really special moments where maybe he's been a little banged up and made some plays and been tough, those types of things. But the collection and body of work over the course of his career, he's certainly a very good quarterback and certainly has a stronger arm than Jared Goff. But when you look at him from a, 30,000 foot view, when you get past the arm thing and maybe a little bit more athletic.
Mm-hmm. I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You know, someone would have to explain to me exactly what the significant upgrade is in that regard. And maybe I'm just totally off my rocker and he's going to come in and be the MVP and throw for 6,000 yards and make everybody look silly. But I just, yes, he can certainly make a bunch of different throws that Jared Goff can't down the field, but how often are you doing that? I mean, how many 40 yard plus throws are we making here? And so it's obviously they're went in a strategic different kind of approach, and I'll be fascinated to see how it works out. But to me, it's a little bit more of a wash than a massive upgrade that I think maybe some people are labeling it.
I have so many questions that run through my head as you're talking, and it's because I want to go in so many different directions and get your opinion on these things. So I'm trying to like make sure that I'm prioritizing the best questions here. And what I want to think about, my first thought right now is just, do you think that Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl, going to the Bucs last year and winning the Super Bowl, do you think that that made teams a little crazy this year? Do you think that teams are overemphasizing this?
You mean just as far as like old quarterbacks?
That's what I talk like just about in the terms of like the age thing has changed because you're 41, you're younger than Tom Brady. You're younger than Drew Brees. You know, you can you imagine as yourself Are you surprised, or do you think like, no, I mean, like, I guess that this makes sense. Like, are you surprised, or do you think that this is a passing fad?
Yeah, I'm definitely surprised. You know, I don't pretend to have all the answers. I can tell you that how I feel, you know, I probably don't take care of myself quite as well as some of those other guys. And, you know, I also don't feel like I felt when I was 25. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there will be at some point some kind of comeback to earth as far as the age thing. And I know the plyos thing will make you more flexible and be able to survive, and the diet thing and the nutrition thing and all those things. But to me, you know, it's still, there's a big difference between being, you know, 24, between 24 and 27, or 27 and 32, than being 35. It has become a little bit more of the norm. And it will be fascinating to see if everybody, you know, can take care of themselves like that and find whatever recipe those older guys have found to survive. But, you know, I think that will be one of the stories we look back on this generation and probably another generation and be like, you know, how are some of these guys doing this? And what does it look like to peel back what that experience was to have some of these guys playing at such a high level for so long, either really special or really bizarre. So
yeah, you know, just thinking about it now, you know, it's just how much our perceptions of things are manipulated so easily or changed. Because from what I remember a year ago, even though Tom Brady was the number one free agent, and even though the Patriots got the best comp pick for Tom Brady, like he was the number one free agent, signed a 2-year deal. There was a little bit of, but there was like, other than a little bit of like, fighting over him to some degree. I remember a lot of people, you know, being like, okay, but nobody is worried that the Patriots are losing Tom Brady. People think that Tom Brady is going to serve as similar to the way that Philip Rivers served in Indianapolis as a quarterback who was an upgrade and capable, but it made nobody was surprised when he walked away after the season. And yet here we are now saying, well, Aaron Rodgers is 37, 38, he might have 6 years left. And Matt Ryan is 36. He might have 5 years left. And Matthew Stafford here, he's going to be 33. And how much time does he have left? Did the Rams trade for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years? And that's sort of a big question, and it'll pertain to how much value they get out of this. You mentioned briefly that you were on the Lions. I mentioned it briefly as well. Your time on the Lions came a couple of years before Stafford's time. Your time of the Lions came with a different coaching staff. And so I can't compare it one-to-one, but there is something about franchises like the Lions where they're not going to be able to escape the criticisms of being like the most hapless franchise or one of the most hapless franchises until they start winning some playoff games. You know, even the Browns, they got to go out there and win some playoff games before people start saying that there's nothing wrong. When your time with the Lions franchise, like, do you see that as like Matthew Stafford's coming out of a very difficult place to play? Because that is how it's perceived. That is how it's pitched a lot, is that Matthew Stafford is escaping the Lions. Did you feel anything with your time in the Lions, like that a person couldn't be as successful there? And I know it might be hard to talk about a franchise that way, but like, what are your thoughts there?
My thoughts are basically yes. You know, I think that it's when you're in an organization that has been, we'll call it dysfunctional, for a significant amount of time, there are usually layers and layers of issues that impact what we see on the field on Sundays. And it usually starts from the top down, and, you know, it's hard. NFL ownership, you know, personnel decisions, you know, those types of decisions can leave lasting impacts and sears in an organization, and can really impact the thought process and the expectations within a building. And so for him to get a fresh start in an organization in a pretty new building that has had some success recently, will, I would guess, be a huge kind of breath of fresh air for him. And now I also think that there are elevated expectations when you go to a Super Bowl contender. You know, no one's predicting the Lions to win the Super Bowl. No one's predicting, you know, that type of offensive execution at the highest level as the Rams have done for him. And so it will be different. I don't necessarily think it's a massive deal one way or another, especially for a guy who's been a franchise guy for so long. But I bet he feels pretty good driving into work. And you know, it's just a different vibe and a different level of expectation when you're in an organization that is used to winning. And so it is more fun. It is a different vibe in the building. And I think it's kind of contagious, to be honest with you.
I want to focus as we head towards the end of the show here, I want to focus maybe on the last couple of years for Stafford. Those statistics that I mentioned, his statistics got better in the last couple of years under offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel. And he also, you know, had to deal with related to that dysfunction to some degree, but also just the nature of the game. You know, he barely had Kenny Golladay. He barely had his, you know, his top receiver, his receivers, you know, Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola at the end of his career. And, you know, even despite that, putting up some pretty good numbers, he had to work through a coach getting fired. Although that was like more towards the end of his time with the Lions. You've worked with Daryl Bevel, even though I don't know how much even Daryl Bevel is the same as when you worked with him. Thoughts on Stafford within the offense, within Bevel's offense? Like, do you see that as a good reason why his numbers improved in the last couple of years? And also thoughts on sort of working as a quarterback in the middle of, well, now I've got a new different receiver. You know, now there's changes here. Now I've got a new coach. Like, in the middle of a season, how big of an impact does that have?
Well, the last part is it's a massive impact. And it might be a breath of fresh air also, though. I think the thing, you know, I'm not going to be able to speak with any sort of certainty at all when I'm talking about the impact of what the offense and kind of his surge in stats has been the last few years. But I will say, my limited experience with Daryl, he's going to run West Coast stuff. And now he's going to go over to Sean McVay, who runs a different iteration of it, but similar language. Mm-hmm. So the kind of the translation will be a little bit faster for him. It's never the exact same verbiage, but it's a lot of the same principles, a lot of similar plays, maybe called differently or, you know, little words, but the essence of the offense will be very similar. And so that part of it will accelerate the learning, accelerate his ability to start to thrive in the offense a little bit faster. And as far as the thing about working, you know, without some of your top guys on the perimeter or some changeover on the perimeter, again, that's life in the league for most guys. You know, if you're fortunate, you have a big time number one wide receiver, but that turnover seemingly happens all the time. And so it will probably just, again, be another kind of element where he's able to come in and work with these new guys for him in LA and build those relationships as quickly as possible. And you know, Tom Brady's a perfect example of that. You know, I think what the Bucs looked like early in the year was not what the Bucs looked like in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so you got to understand that the long-term vibe of the season and continually getting better and having that mindset. But I'll be fascinated to see Stafford if they get an opportunity to really make a deep run in the playoffs, because it adds so much length to the season. It's just a different mentality when you're, when you're kind of have your bags packed in December versus making a long run in January.
And finally, I with regards to, again, that personnel around Stafford in the quarterback position, one thing that the Rams sort of didn't put high on their priority list was making any outside upgrades to their offensive line, including center, which, you know, losing Austin Blythe, which, you know, you can be on any sort of page about how anyone wants to feel about Austin Blythe. Clearly the NFL wasn't too interested or like fighting over the Rams outgoing center. The Rams feel fine with Austin Corbett being the center right now and working with some new pieces on the offensive line, a new starting right guard in Bobby Evans, but they'll have a couple mainstays at tackle with Andrew Whitworth, although he's now 40, if we're talking, you know, again about the age, and Rob Havenstein on the left side, on the right side. I'm curious for Rams fans out there, there's a lot of emphasis on the offensive line, as there is with every team all the time and every team's fan base, it seems, but for the Rams, and every team's fan base thinks that they have the worst offensive line, I think. But with regards to the Rams, you know, how I've always kind of like thought, isn't it crazy that so many Super Bowl teams do seem to have great centers? I don't know. Like, I think like there is some sort of through line there, whether it's centers or the relationship between center and quarterback to some degree. But I don't know, how big is that for like Stafford and Corbett to like immediately like be on the same page and have that sort of relationship working so well as like quality depth at the center position? Or do you think like the Rams, maybe they didn't prioritize it because it's just not that big of a priority?
I kind of come down somewhere in the middle on this. I think that it certainly can be a massive asset when there's a great relationship between the center and the quarterback. And I don't mean like, you know, not dropping the snap. I mean, essentially working together in the pass protection run game. And so every offense is going to be a little bit different about who's making the calls consistently, who's making the mic point, who's making the redeclarations. It's usually the quarterback has kind of the final veto power, but some offenses, the quarterback has almost nothing to do with it, where other offenses, the quarterback is doing almost everything. And so, you know, what that relationship is like in the Rams building, I couldn't tell you, but I can tell you that there's a big difference playing quarterback when you feel really good about the guys up front and when you have that confidence to be able to stand back there and deliver the ball where you need to deliver it, when you need to deliver it consistently, versus feeling like, you know, you got potentially trains coming at you or a tidal wave that you're drowning in with pressure. And so I think it's a massive issue and big concern. And it's fascinating that Big Wit is still doing it at such a high level, so old. That yeah. Dude's an amazing athlete and has been for a long time. I played with him, feels like a lifetime ago, in Cincinnati. And, you know, big, athletic, dynamic dude. And what they really ask them to do in that wide zone, outside zone world is get out there and run and be athletic and do those types of things. So it will be fascinating to see how that offensive line holds up and what Stafford's kind of relationship with, you know, health and throwing the ball from within the pocket and what that time looks like and the run game and all those types of things go hand in hand. But it's certainly a priority for every organization, whether they made the moves or not. They have to feel pretty good about who they have in the building.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I think just to see how this, I think Stafford acquisition was the biggest move still of the offseason. And to have that, whether you're a Rams fan or not, just I think it'll be really interesting to see what a, you know, what a former number one pick who's been sort of hard to find in the mainstream because of where he plays, for him to go to now a team that, you know, has a new $5 billion stadium and 5 primetime games and will be very much on the national picture, however it goes, it'll be really interesting to watch. JT O'Sullivan, thank you so much. Everybody out there listening to this, again, go to youtube.com/theQBschool or search for the QB school. JT is prolific, you know, videos regularly coming out. And again, you can learn a lot. And if that's not enough, I recommend also patreon.com/theQBschool for the getting into the inner circle. So check that out. JT, anything else that you would like to say or plug or where people can find you?
No, that's it. I appreciate the support. I have a blast on through YouTube, and it's just one of those things where it as it continues to grow, if you have suggestions for videos, feel free to drop them in the comments. I do my best to make sure I weed through as many good suggestions as I possibly can and just continue to have fun taking a peek at behind the scenes at ball.
Well, I always keep asking for more Grayson McCall. You know, nobody else is saying this. This is my Zach Wilson. And this is what I'm saying. He's going to be Heisman candidate, first round pick, but that's just me. let everyone else decide for yourself.
Oh yeah, I watched one game and I don't think it was his best game. So maybe I'll go back and take another peek at it.
We'll see. I appreciate all the coverage that you're doing and everyone out there to who's listening. I appreciate you listening. That's it for this episode of Pod TSD. Come back next week for another episode of Something.